or visit kpft.org. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org online. Welcome to the non-fundraising version of Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and my compadre on engineering, Egberto Willis. Now, just because we're not doing fundraising tonight doesn't mean you should forget that we always need to raise funds. So if you feel the urge, the inclination, the tickle at any time, kpft.org tip jar. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. I do have some terrible, terrible news. The universe is dying. They've measured the light, and apparently star formation has slowed down, and stars have aged without rejuvenation to such an extent that the universe emits only half as much light as it did just 2 billion years ago. We should all be extremely concerned. And this should be a matter of national policy in order to increase the renewable energy in the universe. Right, Egberto?
You're absolutely right, my friend.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Let's see. Stuff in the news. Now, this is open forum. You don't have to talk about anything that I bring up. If there's some kind of a bee in your bonnet that's been annoying you all day, it's like, I want to talk about this on the air. I'm pounding the table right now. That's what you're hearing. I want to talk about this on the air, and...
That's a lie. You're pounding me.
No, I'm not. I only do that before or after the show. Never on the air. I am very well behaved that way. So, all right. You know, one of the things, well, two of the things, I suppose, these what you might call the insurgent candidacies on the right and the left. On the left, you've got Bernie. Bernie is the guy who has less money, and he has apparently no polling. He just doesn't believe in polling. And yet he's getting crowds that have been as big as reportedly 28,000 people. We haven't even had the first caucus yet, and this guy is getting tens of thousands of people coming to his rallies. Even in red states, he's getting thousands of people at his rallies. Now, there are actually a number of interesting questions about this. One of the questions that I think I raise, and probably a lot of other liberal Democrats raise, even though I am the most conservative liberal at the station, I think one of the questions that people raise is, these people show up. Why? Is it curiosity? Is it support? Is it an awakening of people that thought that there was not a party that represents them? Are these people going to volunteer? Are these people going to donate and help Bernie raise the seriously huge, ginormous money that he will need if he actually ends up running? Will these people show up to vote, or are they just going out out of curiosity? Because according to the numbers I've seen, the majority of Americans a plurality of Americans self-identify as Democrats. A smaller number self-identify as Republicans, and then there is that smaller number that self-identifies as other or independent. If everyone who identified, self-identified as a Democrat went out to vote Democrat, the Democrats would sweep. The problem goes back to an old saying in business, and particularly retail, that 90% of your complaints come from 10% of your customers. The reason that that's relevant here is the reason that it's true, or a relatively true statement. Anger, frustration, a sense of injustice motivates. Angry people are motivated. If you call a customer service department and just ask, they will tell you that it's really pretty rare for someone to call customer service and go, "Hi, my name is Joe. I had a great experience at your store, and I just wanted to let you know that. Have a great day. Take care. Goodbye." You never get those calls. It's, "I went into your store. Your salesperson was rude. Your price tags were wrong. Your product wasn't available. Blah, 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 blah." So those are the people that are more motivated to go out to vote. Now, there are people that go out for civic duty to vote. There are people that go because they feel that it's a right that they must exercise. There are people that go out to vote because it's become a habit in their lives. And by the way, that's not a bad thing. But the people that show up when, and this is the story I always tell, the people that show up when you have something on the ballot like light rail, and 10% of the voters, a majority of 10% of the eligible voters, make a decision that affects billions of dollars in a multi-decadal program. That's what happens when people don't show up at the polls. It's not just off-year elections. It's not just presidential elections. Arguably, presidential elections in many ways are the least consequential elections. Local and state elections are the most consequential elections for the average person. But it's counterintuitive. There are a lot of things in this world that are counterintuitive, like the universe only emitting half as much light now as it did 2 billion years ago. Who would have thunk? Okay, phone number, which I guess I should have mentioned up front, so I would be talking less. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Open forum. You can talk about anything that's been bugging you all day. So getting back to Bernie Sanders, my wife, of course, is a huge supporter of Hillary because she loves Bill Clinton. She thinks he's a great man. I think that in many ways he's a flawed but otherwise great man. She loves Hillary. She thinks she's an example to all women. She's smart. She's accomplished. She's articulate. And she's a woman who is ready to be president. I mean, I think she's ready to be president. I supported Hillary in 2008 when Obama first ran. We actually contributed some money. My wife contributed a little time. And Obama was okay with me. And I think he's been an okay president, maybe potentially a near great president under the circumstances. We'll see. History will judge. But Bernie, I feel that Bernie represents, and I think we have a caller coming in. Bernie represents, in my opinion, the views that a lot of liberal Democrats have been waiting for an important figure in the party to articulate. Yes, he's a democratic socialist. And yes, he required a special dispensation to run on the Democratic Party ticket for the nomination without actually becoming a member of the Democratic Party. That required like a special thing. And I think that if anything, he may be proving that when Democrats try to pretend to be Republican light, that is the thing that turns off their base. That is the thing that turns out the people that might otherwise show up at the polls. I think Bernie may be proof of that. I think Bernie is really important in terms of making socialism a respectable topic in this country because, and I don't mean to sound, you know, like all lefty and stuff, but I think that the capitalist segment of our society, the oligarchical segment of our society, the political segment of our society, there are people that have vested interests in making sure unions are weak. Socialism is considered a dirty word. Liberal is considered a dirty word in many quarters now. It's considered a pejorative. So I think Bernie serves a useful function in all of those ways. My problem, my fear, let's say Bernie gets the nomination, and I really like Hillary, but it wouldn't break my heart if Bernie got the nomination. But then I think of George McGovern in 1972. He won the Democratic nomination. Of course, the Democratic Party was in some disarray at that point because of assassinations and shootings and leading people like Robert F. Kennedy no longer being in the picture. By 1972, I believe that Lyndon Johnson had passed away from a heart attack. So they were in some disarray, and they got George McGovern nominated, and he was massacred. I think he won maybe one state, and I think that Nixon won some kind of ridiculously overwhelming majority of the vote, like, I don't know, 57 or 60%, something like that. It was a massacre. That's the thing that would keep me up nights if Bernie got the nomination. I think at this point, in terms of my head and my heart trying to find some kind of a compromise, I kind of think that a Hillary-Bernie ticket, you know, having Bernie in the vice presidency, if he could negotiate a real role in the government, and there is absolutely nothing in the Constitution that prevents the vice president from being appointed to a cabinet position or an ambassadorial position. There is absolutely nothing in the Constitution. As a matter of fact, the Constitution says nothing about the vice president except he succeeds the president in the event of the president's inability to serve. That's all he's there for. He's a backup president. He could put up his feet and read the newspaper every day and take naps, and the Constitution wouldn't miss him. Bernie, of course, would not settle for that kind of vice presidency. And if he could negotiate some strength, I think that this could be, perhaps, if it's done right, the most consequential election of our lifetimes. I would say our century, but the century is only 15 years old, so that's not impressive. Okay, I'm going to do a quick station ID so that we don't interrupt our first caller. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can help support this station by going to kpft.org, clicking on the tip jar, and donating something, money preferably. Or come by the station and drop it off. We'll give you a receipt. That's fine, too. 713-526-5738 is the phone number here. It is open forum, and my first caller is John. John, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm all right. How you doing, sir?
I'm okay. What's on your mind? You're on the air now.
Hey, you know, you said something that I've been thinking about, and I think we've talked about this subject for long enough. And this comes to the anointing of Hillary Clinton, and the Democrats, as flawed as Hillary, I mean, as popular as she is, are women trying to tell me that we're electing Hillary based on the fact that qualification number one, she's a woman, and that's it? Because I'm starting to really fear what's happening. What they want to do with Hillary is like the Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope, whatever it was called. They're going to start pounding her with all the email and the servers, and she has quite a bit of skeleton somewhere, you know.
Doesn't everybody?
Right, and they're gonna take her down by bits and inches, and I'm afraid that's what's gonna happen. And by God, we should not have somebody like Scott Walker win the Republican nomination, because as much as we might ignore him, this guy has survived recall after recall, and he knows how to play the game.
I have to say, I don't trust the election results, but that's okay.
Right, and also, I've never understood this. So, I'm in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that I call two guys, my senators, whom I have absolutely no idea how they got elected? Could you please explain to me this electoral college in Texas? How is it exactly that we ended up in Houston and Austin and San Antonio? These are almost the three of the largest cities in the United States. They're progressive cities. How is it the population of these three big, Dallas, Austin, or are we just all Republicans? Maybe I'm just wrong. But how did we end up with Ted Cruz and, was it John?
John Cornyn.
John Cornyn? How did we end up with
John, not as crazy as Ted Cruz Cornyn, which is really saying something.
The machine gun, what is it called? The machine gun bacon-eating senator.
Yeah, that's Ted Cruz, the machine gun cooking senator. And he kept saying he was using an automatic weapon, and it was actually a semi-automatic weapon, and it says volumes that he couldn't tell the difference.
Right, but
I don't like guns, and I can tell the difference.
Right. What we're talking about is no longer an election.
All right.
We're talking about people who are doing calculation of electoral colleges,
mm-hmm.
and they know all I have to do is flip Ohio, and I'll be president.
Okay.
We're no longer electing people based on policy. We just rubber stomping them because we know Texas will never be blue.
Well, first of all, getting back to your original question, how'd we end up with these guys as our senators? I'm going to give you the short answer, and then I'm going to give you a little longer answer.
All right, let me get off the air. Let me listen to this.
Okay, if that's what you prefer. We do have open lines, 713.
Okay, then I'll stay.
All right, then you're going to stay?
Yep.
Cool. We still have open lines, 713-526-5738. Okay, let me give you the short answer, and then I'll give you a little longer answer. The short answer is these guys got elected because people like us, not us particularly, but people like us, did not show up to vote. That's
that
the short
really
answer.
True, though,
yeah.
Or is it just
the turnouts.
They have been doing a gerrymandering of the district.
You cannot gerrymander a statewide elective office, which is why you get things like the Senate, like the House rather, being so predominantly Republican. Whereas the Senate, it's much closer because statewide elections cannot be gerrymandered. They're statewide. So you get senators like Cruz and Cornyn because the people that show up are the 10% of your customers who cause 90% of your complaints. That's essentially, that's the bottom line. So that's the short version. The longer version, when you talk about things like the Electoral College and when you talk about things like the election of the president, first of all, again, it all does come down to turnout. The way that, for example, delegates are assigned depends on who was during a presidential year. I believe it depends on who won a particular precinct during the last presidential election determines the number of delegates they get, for example, to the state convention.
That has nothing to do with the next. Why should that be the case?
Because people don't show up to vote.
My goodness. There should be a law against people not voting in this country.
And you know what? There are countries that have done that. I think now Australia even has a law that mandates that people vote. And that sounds, and I have to tell you, 20, 30 years ago, I would have thought that was a horrible idea. I would have been on that group of people that says if you don't know what the issues are and if you don't know the people you're voting for, you should stay home and let the people who know go out and actually choose. I used to believe that, and a lot of people still believe it, and I understand why they believe it. What changed my mind was that I came to believe that you've got this motivated minority that shows up so diligently, and because they're the 10% of your customers that cause 90% of your complaints, they go out to vote. They make the choices. The other people stay home and figure, it's only my one vote. What can I do? And we end up with Cruz's and Cornyn's. Now, when you get to the presidential election, their gerrymandering of districts can have an impact. Also, the states determine whether they are, what is the term? Winner take all. The state legislators determine whether their electoral college delegates are winner-take-all or divided in proportion to the vote or divided by precinct, which, of course, the precincts are gerrymandered. So there are lots of different ways that can be manipulated because the Constitution delegates to the states any powers that are not granted to the federal government, and among those powers is determining election rules. Which is
that's
why you've got such a disparity.
I mean, that's way ridiculous. I lost you way.
I'm sorry. That means I did a really bad job.
If we're losing our own election, tell me, why should any other country look at these elections and our Congress the way everything is stuck, and everybody's like, well, the mentality they have is win or go home. It's like, it's either my way or there's no way.
It's an embarrassment, and it looks like the final days of the Roman Empire.
Right.
It's horrible.
I'm now being told that Israeli citizens are being urged to call Congress and demand that the Iran deal should be rejected. And I'm thinking, do you know what that will mean? The EU will say, you know what, United States, you're on your own. We made a deal with these guys, and we're moving forward. So what is Ted Cruz going to do when he's elected, or what's his name, our former governor who's talking tough?
Rick Perry? Oops.
He said he's going to dismiss all this stuff. That's exactly what the mullahs of Iran want.
Well, you know, I could understand an actual debate. People, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. If people want to look at the treaty and contest this or that provision, that's one thing. The thing that bugs me is there really is only one other option, one other alternative in the face of a failure to ratify or go forward with this treaty, and that is war.
But he said that.
And they don't say it, but that's the only option.
Came and told him, hey, you better watch your words.
Well, John, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I have someone else now that's been waiting for a few minutes, but I appreciate your call. I hope that I shed more light than heat and gave you a little, didn't confuse you too much by going too crazy.
That's crazy already.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. Take care. Hope to hear from you again. All right, we have some open lines, 713-526-5738. Claudel, is that the name, Claudel?
Yes, that's the name.
Hi, how are you doing tonight? You're on the air. What's on your mind?
I'm doing pretty good. I think you really did a good job of explaining some of the issues that we do have, I will say, here in Texas. Because as you said, what's really frustrating is when you go to the polls to vote here in Texas. I remember in the last elections, for some of the like local Congress positions and things like that, there were a number of Republicans that ran uncontested. So even if you're voting like a straight Democratic ticket, you quite often have no one to vote for, because there's no one else running.
Can I tell you a quick joke that kind of relates to what you're saying?
Uh-huh.
This man, very, very devout religious man. He's trying to support his family. He can't get enough money for food. He can't get enough money for rent. Every day he goes to church and prays to God, God, please let me win the lottery. I promise I'll honor you. I'll tithe. But I need to help my family. Please let me win the lottery. And he does this every day, every day, every day. And finally, one day, a light shines down on him out of the heavens, and a voice says to him, help me out here. Buy a lottery ticket. So we need more people to go and buy the lottery ticket.
I mean, that's exactly what it is, you know. And one thing that really did hurt the Democratic process, even though Obama won, at the same time that he won, we lost the Congress that year.
Yep. And one it was like Clinton Redux.
Were the supposed blue dog Democrats that were fighting harder to keep their seats than they were to pass legislation, and it backfired. So a lot of those people still lost their seats in Congress, and we barely, and actually we lost the majority, and you would have thought we would have learned our lesson, but then years later, we lost a majority in the Senate also. And so even though we still have, you know, we can filibuster in the Senate, but that's about it at this point. And we literally had an opportunity where we could have had Democratic Congress, Democratic Senate, and the president, and now we have just the president.
Right.
And hopefully.
And during a freaking census year. During a freaking census year, we got no turnout. It was driving
exactly.
me nuts.
And I think when, you know, one mistake that people made was when Obama won, they forgot about the midterm elections a few years later.
But everybody does that all the time.
But then that was it. And so we have this situation coming up now where similar things are coming back up, and people are so afraid of the phrase socialism, even though we already have socialist things in our economy. But we're so afraid of that because the Republicans have done a great job of falsely linking it to communism. And so when people hear the word socialist, they automatically think of failed communist regimes. And when they, if they even took a second to think about it, our whole tax base, our whole Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all of those are socialist.
Oh, police, ideas. Fire department, Coast Guard, military,
police department, all of those things.
Schools.
Are the teachers. Those are all socialist ideas.
Exactly.
And but we all get this in our head that it won't work. And the Republicans have literally wasted. They could have capitalized in these last 8 years, but they really wasted time voting against Obamacare 50 plus times. Like, instead of actually showing, hey, this is what we are doing, all they really did was vote against Obamacare for the last 8 years and did absolutely nothing with that. And then when the Supreme Court upheld it, they literally called the Supreme Court biased. Which is one of the greatest things I've ever heard. When the Supreme Court, because it wasn't, even the Supreme Court wasn't, you know, Democrat. It wasn't straight down the line. There were a couple of Republican guys that said, hey, this is lunacy.
Nixon guys.
We're even talking about it.
Well, and I think a Reagan appointee. Well, you know, one of the things that I've said for many years is when Republicans win an election, they figure it was honest. When Republicans lose, they figure it must have been rigged. They can't, in their heads, they cannot lose an honest election. Their ideas are so great, and the majority of Americans is so behind them that if they lose, it must be a matter of election fraud. Voter fraud, because the real problem is not voter fraud, it's election fraud, which is
that's
a government
exactly
issue.
That's what it is. And so I'm glad that here in Texas that at least temporarily, the Voter Rights Acts were upheld for a little bit. I mean, the Republicans still have some time to to pull them back again. But like you, I do think that Bernie, to some people, may be a little too far left. I mean, I think what you said is him as the VP or someone in the cabinet could be a really good idea. Would be
or
a really
both.
Good idea. Or what do you think of the Castro brothers out of San Antonio? Maybe one of them for, you know, Hillary as the president, one of the Castro brothers as the VP.
I've seen them in action. I've seen them speak in person. They're both physically and intellectually attractive people. They're well-spoken. I don't think it's their time.
I think their time could come. Maybe it's 4 years too early.
Four, eight, they're young guys.
Yeah.
But the thing about a Hillary-Bernie ticket is Bernie has already shown that he excites people. He gets crowds out. And, you know, if you promise that if Hillary wins and she makes him her running mate and she will give him a job worthy of his ambitions, whether it's Health and Human Services or whether it's Secretary of State or whatever.
Yeah.
We actually have some other callers right now. So I would like to give everybody a shot. I appreciate your calling, Claudel. You have anything you want to wrap up with briefly?
That's it, really. I really, you know, it's refreshing to hear talk like this on the radio.
Thank you.
So often all we hear is the crazies on AM radio.
Yeah.
So it's refreshing to hear some positive, strong liberal talk on the radio.
I appreciate that. All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care, Claudel. All right. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. On the engineering board, I've got my compadre Egberto Willis, who has his show Thursdays at 3 p.m., Politics Done Right. Here, as we like to say, I only do politics okay. Most conservative liberal at KPFT. Anyway, we will have several open lines. I make an effort to get everybody on. So if we get more callers, we'll have less time per person, but I endeavor to get everybody on for at least a minute or two. Next person on the air is Aaron. Aaron, thank you for calling and being patient with us. What's on your mind? You're on the air now.
I'm on the air.
You are on the air. So be careful what you say, man. I'm hovering over that red button, so be careful.
The flag on top of the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah. Okay.
Who actually created it? Who actually stenciled it? You know, knitted it. You know what I'm saying?
You mean the artist who sort of designed that vehicle for the purposes of the show?
No, just the flag.
Oh. I think that the flag was actually designed by Robert E. Lee as his battle flag, the Army of Virginia, Northern Virginia. Is that, Egberto, is my memory playing tricks on me there?
It is a battle flag, but I couldn't tell you who invented it or who made it.
It was originally designed because, you know, the original so-called stars and bars actually looked an awful lot like the Union flag, and soldiers got confused in battle, and each side, soldiers would run the wrong way toward the flag. So, you know, they'd rally to the wrong flag, and then they're prisoners of war. It was a very bad thing. So that's why Robert E. Lee made this really distinctive. And, I mean, you have to give him props for something that's incredibly iconic, powerfully graphic. And he designed this battle flag. I'm sorry?
Oh, my bad. I recognize the dude, the other dude's voice. He said something.
I think, are you listening to the radio right now?
No, I was, and then I stepped out, but...
Yeah, you can't have the radio on while you're talking. That's just confusing.
I seen the actual border of the flag. It was white.
There were...
It didn't offend me too much, you know?
Well, there were about... There were about half a dozen official Confederate so-called national flags. The first one was the Stars and Bars, where it had red, white, red on the stripes, and then it had a blue field with stars, and that resembled the Union flag too much. And then I think they went to, what was it, a white flag? I know at one point they had a white flag with the Confederate battle flag where the blue field would normally go. And the idea was to advertise the white supremacy aspect of the Confederacy. And then, because when the wind wasn't blowing, it looked like a surrender flag because all you saw was the white, they put a vertical red stripe on the other end so that you always knew it wasn't a flag of surrender. So, I mean, they had a number of different flags, and I think it was actually a total of half a dozen. But that white flag with the red stripe with the battle flag field, I think, was their final official flag.
No. So you got the
injustice, though. Injustice.
They turned them the
Do we need to get the other person on the phone? We'll just have a three-way here?
No, I'm in the living room.
She's on the phone with her man. With my husband. He's North Carolina. He traveled to North Carolina. We do work in Houston.
Ah.
No.
Okay. Well, since this is just getting a little complicated for me, if it's okay, Aaron, I'm going to let you go. Do you have anything you want to say very briefly to wrap up your thoughts?
No, it was fun. You answered my question. You was creative. Good job.
Okay. Thank you very much, Aaron. I appreciate your calling. Okay. We got Jerry on next. Jerry, you're on the air at KPFT. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. First of all, about the dreadlock in the U.S. Congress and all that, let's be honest. Republicans are trying to shoot other Republicans in the back.
Don't you
and
love
Republicans, it? Republicans, of course, and everything. And unfortunately, they got it. While they're trying to shoot each other in the back, they're also trying, there's two or three different groups trying to shoot each other in the back. Then there's enough Democrats, and, you know, the Democrats have enough power right now that they've got a horse trade with them. Well, you can't get two or three different groups of people in your own party to agree and then actually hand over something to the Democrats to do the kind of horse trading that's supposed to go on in Congress.
Well, the problem is you've got large segments that don't want a horse trade. You know, it's their way or the highway.
That's right, and that's exactly the way a lot of Republicans are. And the thing about it is like I said, it's just like that conversation, and I called you a couple of months ago for the first time and everything, and I pointed out that, you know, a lot of Republicans are going to get hurt by, you know, they basically need that social spending as much as we do, as much as Democrats do, if not maybe even more so, and for themselves and their kids and all that other stuff. You know, most of them aren't rich, like I've said before, and all that, and, you know, but they seem to be convinced that, you know, somehow or another they can make this thing work. I don't get how they think that, but, you know, basically Democrats won, and they got a biracial guy in the White House. Of course, a lot of Republicans flipped their lid on that. And everything, and there's a lot of people who sit there and go, no, that's not true. No, that's absolutely true. The numbers, the studies bear me out on that. About 40% of the Republican Party just literally all but flipped its wig when Obama became president.
Well, you know, there are several things here. First of all, there's an old saying that politics is the art of the possible.
Yeah.
And you've got people in Congress now, you've got people in government that don't like government. They're not running for office to make government work better. They're running for office so they can break government and then say, see how badly it works? Because they're the ones who broke it. Now it's working badly. And it's like, well, that means we need less government. So that's the problem of what's going on. But as far as the Republicans having these factional fights, I mean, all that a liberal can be is grateful.
Well, that's true, too. And actually, I took one of the reasons why I quit calling into the station for a couple of years is because I knew what was going to happen there. I finally sat there and thought, you know, I'm not going to have to really worry about what's going to happen day to day on or even week to week up there in Washington, D.C., because nobody's going to be able to do anything.
Well, you know, one of the things that's important to me about doing this show, one of the reasons that I aspired to do a show like this, and perhaps I flatter myself, forgive me if that seems to be the case, but I think that people need to see things in different ways. If we keep seeing things in the same way, nothing will change. So, for example, one of the things that I've been saying from time to time, we have to stop trying to convince Republicans with liberal arguments. You know, there's this guy who does the crazy cats from hell, and he came up with a great quote that I think perfectly exemplifies the approach that liberals need. He said, "You cannot look at a cat through dog-colored glasses. You cannot expect a cat to act like a dog. You cannot expect a Republican to be convinced by arguments that liberals consider no-brainers." That is why, as I think a terrific example, you now have liberals and conservatives both against the death penalty. The liberals are against it mostly because they consider it inhumane and untrustworthy in terms of always getting a guilty person. The conservatives are against it because they're finally convinced it costs too much to kill somebody.
Yeah.
So if the liberals kept arguing the humanity argument, they would never have convinced the conservatives. It's when they started doing some numbers and going, oh, and by the way, it costs a lot more to kill somebody than to incarcerate them. And then the conservatives come along and say, oh, well, then let's not kill them. Let's just keep them in jail because it saves us a couple of million dollars in execution. So you have to confront their views on their premises. And I think that's one of the important things that I hope I can occasionally put out to people and make them think and make them remember. And when they're arguing or debating politics with a conservative friend or acquaintance, they don't try to convince them on liberal terms, but they try to figure out what makes a conservative's head tick and then convince him that way.
Yeah. Well, and I also wanted to say that I totally agree with you. If we don't ratify this treaty,
it's war.
With the Iranians, basically, you're right. We're putting ourselves directly online to go to war. And the problem with that is, well, there's a number of problems with it. For one, fighting Iran isn't going to be like fighting in Afghanistan or Iraq.
Yeah, because Afghanistan and Iraq worked out so well, and we just walked all over that and got done in a couple of months.
Well, it didn't work out well.
Exactly.
But the thing about it is that going in there is going to be a lot tougher job.
Well, it's a mountainous country.
And everybody seems to think we can just bomb them.
Yeah, it's a mountain, and that only delays them. That does what the treaty does without the necessity of bombing them.
Yeah, there was a New York Review of Books article that I read a couple of years ago, I guess now a year or two ago, et cetera, and said basically there's no way ultimately we can stop them from getting a bomb, in essence, beyond, you know, basically we'd have to nuke the country ourselves.
And
in essence, was kind of like what, you know, in other words, the cure would be worse, arguably, from a moral standpoint than the problem.
Well, not only from a moral standpoint, but from a practical standpoint, the fact is that there are a lot of Iranian citizens who are pro-Western. And if you start bombing the country, that's the fastest way to lose that, to convert them from being pro-Western to being anti-Western, but also to the extent that they might inexplicably remain pro-Western after being bombed, they would have no political leverage because everybody would look at them like they're crazy. Why are you favoring the people that bombed the heck out of us?
Yeah, that's true.
So, all right, Jerry, I'm going to let you go. We got a couple of other folks.
Yeah, I know you got other people. I'll talk to you here later.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Jerry. Appreciate your calling. We do have a couple of open lines, 713-526-5738. If you call at this point, I cannot promise that I'll give you a lot of time, but I will do my very best to give you a minute or two to say your piece. Greg, you are on the air, and I thank you for your patience.
I will make this brief.
Okay.
Appalls me more about the Republican Party is how some of their candidates and some of their elected officials who are against this treaty, they never have presented their alternative.
No.
If you ever heard their arguments, well, we could get a better deal.
Yeah.
People like Tom Cotton, the freshman senator of Arkansas. What better deal do you have on the table, Senator Cotton?
That they'll agree to. You can propose anything. What'll they agree to?
Yeah, well, I agree too. You have said you dislike this because it doesn't go far enough. Okay.
There isn't
we would deal with every opportunity to be this.
Greg, you're kind of seriously breaking up on me here.
Like I said, when you had every ample opportunity to be engaged in the process and bring up your own ideas for an alternative deal, where were you?
Right. You can't just say no. When you're in government and you're governing, you have to say no, and this is what I would do instead. And you can't just say, I want a better deal, because that's basically imprecise and, you know, it doesn't get you anywhere. So what really annoys me is that these guys don't say that what they are doing leaves only the one alternative, and that is bombing or invasion or both. That's the only alternative. Egberto wants to make a comment. I think I didn't let him in when somebody else was on. He still got it in his head.
No. Actually, you answered the other guy what I expected you to say. So, I mean, that was all right. But what the young man here is saying is important. They actually do want another war.
They do.
It is about maintaining.
But they won't say it.
The military-industrial complex needs a war, because right now we're not bombing enough to actually keep them flourished in money.
You know, I think that there may be a component of that. I don't think that that's all of it. I really do think, and this is where we get to left and lefter. I think that there is this component of imperialism. There has always been both an imperialist and an anti-imperialist streak in American politics, going back to the very beginning, the War of 1812. We tried to take over Canada. That's true. You didn't know that? War of 1812 partly was about expanding the American experiment.
That was amazing, but I believe it or not, I just found that out recently.
Really? Yeah, that was part of it, and that's how we straightened out our northern border. We just kind of traded some land, and that was really a very important war in our history. And you've got these people that they have an imperialistic streak. They have an American exceptionalism streak. They have the notion that we have the best military in the world. We can conquer anybody, anywhere. And, you know, as Donald Rumsfeld once said, something to the effect of, it's really a shame to have such a great military and not use it. See, I support a strong military for the exact opposite reason. I think the best reason to have a strong military is so you don't have to use it. Okay, it's your turn, Greg.
These people have always had an issue. They always will have an issue. If you watch every movie, probably over the last 50, 60, 70 years, has always been about manifest destiny, as you put it, American exceptionalism. And I wish people like Ted Cruz would understand. You got elected to be the United States Senator by a group of people who, if you tried to explain true policy to them, would not understand.
But they elected one of their own.
They elected one of their own.
So he's not in an intellectual position to understand. You know, he has been called, it has been said by Alan Dershowitz that Ted Cruz was the smartest student he ever had in law school. I have listened to some of what Ted Cruz says, as much as I can tolerate listening. And I actually think that Alan Dershowitz is mistaken. I don't underestimate that Ted Cruz is smart. I don't certainly can't underestimate his educational credentials. But here's what I think. I think he's got a terrific memory. You know, he speaks off the cuff. And I think he's got this great memory that allowed him to remember all his legal precedents for tests and remember all the legal arguments. I don't know that he actually learned them, but I think he remembers them. And that...
I think he's smart.
I don't doubt that he's smart. I am not saying he isn't. But I don't think that he is the brilliant student that Alan Dershowitz thinks he was. I think he was the student who is smart, but mainly benefits from an exceptional memory that allowed him to do really great on arguments and moot courts and stuff like that.
Mike, it's your show, but let me tell you something, my brother. I think he is so smart that he can play the stupid role very well.
He's not playing a stupid role. I don't believe he's playing to be stupid. I think he believes the stuff he says. I think as much as he articulates it, he means what he says. But I think that the reason he is considered so brilliant, I mean, think about it. If I had a photographic memory, pardon my saying so, but I've got the tests to back it up. I'm a pretty bright guy. If I had the memory, which I don't, to back up my just thinking power, you know, there's no telling the stuff that I could spout. But I don't have that kind of photographic memory. I have better than average retention, but that's all. Ted Cruz, if he has a photographic memory or anything like it, imagine what he can do with it with even slightly above average intelligence.
You see, I mean, I really think this guy is in the game to win.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to do whatever he needs to win.
Yes, not disagreeing with any of that. But what we're talking about is, why is he considered to be so smart? And I think it's more memory than smarts.
Well,
He draws upon this enormous encyclopedia of recollection.
But what I've seen him do is analyze how to make a stupid argument work. And that is not something that's very easy to do.
I have never heard him make a stupid argument work for me.
Because you are not stupid.
But exactly. He makes a stupid argument work for people that don't have the knowledge or the education, and pardon me for being a little elitist, but education matters, to really pick apart his arguments or his lies.
And you know what? It requires intelligence to do that. It really does.
But he fired a semi-automatic weapon and called it an automatic, and even people that have a high school education that like guns know that was a semi-automatic.
Yeah. He lied.
He lied, or he just didn't know, and he's just putting on the act of being this great gun advocate. Greg, I'm sorry, we're not letting you talk much.
And the other thing I would say about him, this is the same man who shut down the government.
Yep.
He's also one who, last week, to try to get people to know who he is, used bacon and put it on a rifle and said, that's the way we do things here in Texas.
Isn't that embarrassing as a Texan?
This is the guy, and I'm going to ask all of us, whether we be liberals and conservatives or Democrats or Republicans, and this guy comes up for re-election, you ought to be just as willing to pepper him with as many questions about what he's done for this state as your junior senator, instead of trying to be a presidential candidate and do this as a publicity campaign. Because that's what this is. We as Texans ought to be ashamed that he's our senator, and we ought to be embarrassed. We really should be.
But the only thing we need to do to change it is to show up at the polls, and not enough people are doing that. You got to show up. You got to buy the lottery ticket.
And I don't know if anybody has seen the commercials about the Iran deal, how they want a better deal. I always want to ask these groups who are paying for these ads, what better deal do you have on the table?
Like exactly.
Us off with.
Well, the better deal is war.
Other than war.
Exactly. Yeah, they won't say it, but it's, you know, you have to understand it. And the fact that Senator Schumer from New York, the fact that he is against this treaty as well, is a great disappointment to me, because he also will not articulate the alternative, which is war. And the war, unless we fully occupy them, which really is not in the cards, unless they can be fully occupied and defeated, and we can go in there and literally take these nuclear facilities apart and deport all the scientists the way we did German scientists after the war and divide them up among the Allies. And, I mean, it's really almost an impossible task. Nothing is truly impossible, but it's impossible enough that it isn't even worth contemplating. And that's the alternative, and nobody wants to say anything about it. The guys who are against it won't say it.
And that's why, and I would write people like Tom Cotton, and I would ask all of us to do it and say, okay, do you want us to go back to the Middle East in another war? Do you want us to go back and have our lives and our treasures abused again because you didn't finish the job the first time?
Well, I think the problem is that Tom Cotton will not respond to letters from any of us, because typically they refer them back to their constituents, they refer constituents of another elected official back to that elected official. So it has, those kinds of things have to come from their districts. But where it really has to happen is in the media, on the floor of the Senate, on the floor of the House. You've got to have people challenging these people. And I mean, there are decorum rules. You can't just say you're an a-hole and why are you doing this? And, you know, you've got decorum. That was my colleague this and my friend that. And, you know, they used to actually have like fights and beatings with canes and stuff 150 years ago. But someone has to confront them on the floor. One of the things I loved about Anthony Weiner, whatever his other flaws, and he was not liked well in the House, but by golly, he had a way with words when he called people to account. And we need more of that. Alan Grayson is you know, I don't think he's a dumb guy. I've read a lot of the stuff that he puts out on email. He has some great ideas, but he comes out like a pugilist, like a prize fighter. And I still think, though, he said one of the best things ever on the House floor when he said that the Republican medical plan, what they proposed instead of Obama, is don't get sick, and if you get sick, die quickly. That's their medical plan. And that was, I think that was great. But, you know, for the most part, I think that, I don't know, I have very mixed feelings about Alan Grayson, but that's another thing entirely. All right, Greg, I'm going to let you go. I got another caller on the line.
Again, it's been an honor and pleasure to speak with you.
I appreciate that very much, and I appreciate your call and hope to hear from you again.
You will.
All right, great. Take care. We have Wayne on the line. We may have time for somebody or two after Wayne, if you're brief. So we have open lines, 713-526-5738. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My engineer and compadre is Egberto Willis, who does his own show Thursdays at 3 p.m., Politics Done Right here. I don't know what the heck we're doing. Okay, so we got Wayne on the line. Wayne, how you doing tonight? You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. What are you thinking?
And the same thing, Egberto. How you doing, Egberto? I'm thinking that a party, which is the Republican Party, has no vision, Mike. They have no vision because they can't see what's in front of them. But let me go back to what some things that Claude was saying. And I think one of the things that he said, I kind of forgot it now, but he was saying that they were like, you help me out with that. You help me.
Yeah, I will.
You say it. But he was saying that there's nothing in the Republican Party that stands for anything. I heard you say a while ago that if America had won a war against Canada and taken over Canada, Ted Cruz would be the happiest man in Texas right now because he would be a United States citizen, right?
He wouldn't have dual citizenship.
He would have United States citizen because he would have been flying under the United States flag, right?
He actually had a foreign birth certificate, something Obama did not have. Obama had an American birth certificate from Hawaii. So this guy actually was born outside the country and had a Canadian birth certificate.
Yeah.
Irony, man.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, so therefore we talk about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz has no vision. Ted Cruz can stand up and spout rhetoric and do a good job of spouting rhetoric, but rhetoric is not leadership. Cornyn, or however you want to pronounce
John Cornyn.
I may not be etiquette enough to pronounce it.
That's okay.
Right. But Tom Cornyn, is that his name?
John Cornyn.
John Cornyn. John Cornyn can't rebut Ted Cruz because both of them are idealistic.
I will offer some rebuttal to what you say.
Okay.
And then I'm going to have to let you go because I actually got a couple of callers at the end. I think that it's important to never underestimate your opponents. So when you say that these guys have no vision, I think they just have a vision that we don't understand, that we don't agree with, but their vision is essentially a form of anarchy or close to it.
And I would agree with that. But that's not a vision that the people need to be led down, and people have to understand it.
But if they articulated that vision, they would lose their supporters. I got to let you go. I apologize, Wayne, but I got three people that I'm going to try to give a minute to each.
Go ahead.
I thank you so much. You take care. Have a great night. Appreciate your call, and call earlier next time, and you get yourself maybe 10 minutes. Derek, you're on the air. You've got a minute or two. What's on your mind tonight?
Okay, I had a quick question. My question is this: with the stars and bars with the Confederate flag,
yeah,
and everyone that says that it's all about heritage, I would like to know what country has defeated another country or has defeated an opponent in war and allowed them to fly their flag on their land.
Well, of course, first of all, they're not a country.
Right, right,
but
understand.
here's the thing about civil war. You can continue to punish the other side, or you can try to reintegrate them into your society. We do have free speech. I think that there are both historical and legal reasons why government entities should not be flying those flags on government grounds. But, of course, individuals are certainly perfectly free. I think that the flag did not become the symbol of hate that it's become until it was used to counter the civil rights movement, when it was very, very obviously saying segregation now, segregation forever. And that was it. Derek, unless you got something really quick to wrap up, I got one or two other people I want to give a chance on the air. You have something quick you want to finish?
No, I'll catch you guys later. Thanks for
I appreciate it. Call me earlier next time. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to skip Jerry for the moment. Is this the same Jerry that called earlier? If it's the same Jerry, we need to go to Cheryl. Cheryl. And Jerry, if you're a different Jerry, I apologize. Cheryl, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question in reference to the pipeline. The pipeline is supposed to be built
the XL.
From Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay. What's the question?
It wasn't decided by President. He did not sign off on this, right?
No, he has not.
Okay, that's what I thought. But every time I go down to the Brazoria County or the Matagorda counties, anywhere down south, I see construction for the pipelines going on.
Well, I think that the southern portion of the pipeline is being built. What they haven't approved is the transnational part of the pipeline. That requires both State Department approval and ultimately presidential approval for that to happen. That is not a congressional decision. Okay, I'm sorry. You're going to be quick because I want to try to get that one last person on, and I got a minute and a half.
Okay, so the southern part of the pipeline has been approved, and what are they connecting to?
The southern part of the pipeline does not require approval except by state regulators, state and local regulators. And the idea is always to be able to move gas and oil to a port, and most of the oil that's going to come from XL is going to be exported. That's one of the interesting things here. Cheryl, I am so sorry. I want to get this one more person. As I always say, call earlier next time, and I'll be happy to discuss anything you want that I feel semi-competent to talk about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. I appreciate your call. Jerry, you're going to have the last word. You got about 30 seconds.
60 seconds. Gotcha. Buddy, what makes me laugh is that people that agree with what's winning right now, and I call it what because it ain't a real figure. Donald winning right now first is funny because I tell people encourage it because that's exactly what the Democrats are going to run against, somebody that really doesn't make sense. I'm a Hispanic Latino that lives in Kingwood. And I'm lucky enough to admit where I was at from where I came from, but what I see as the Reaganomics is that we start putting in comedians, actors, just like Arnold in California. You got Kinky Freeman that tried to run a couple of times. These people really need to realize that voting for more than just an image that backs you up because of what you say, instead of voting for American Idol or so, you need to go to the polls and really put this person into office, whether Democrat or Republican. I went from George Bush, he was a Republican.
Okay.
Jerry, which he changed.
Jerry, I am completely out of time, and I apologize. I am completely out of time, Jerry. I'm glad you were able to get in your last word, but I must let you go. Thank you so much for everybody who called, the people that only had a little time. I always tell you, call earlier. The first caller often gets 10 minutes or more just because they're the first caller and there's no one else on the line. Always remember, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. Show up at the polls. Show up.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, KPFT.org worldwide.
Many of us know someone looking to sell or just get rid of an old car, truck, RV, or motorcycle. It may be just taking up room in the garage or driveway. Sometimes the cost of the repair just doesn't make a sale even worth it. And as we all look for tax deductions at the end of the year, you may want to consider donating that unwanted vehicle.